welcome to Section 9. My name's Damien Hull.
And I'm Dorothy. And today we're going to be talking about skills. What kind of skills do we have? And what kind of skills do we want to attain to get the job that we want? And when you and I sat down to actually try to discuss this, you know, we realized that you're going to have a different kind of set of goals when it comes to your skills than I do because you're in IT. You're actually working on the job. You know, you have your direction more defined because you're in it. For me, I'm going to have to look at where am I at? What do I have? Where do I want to go? And how do I attain the skills that I'm supposed to have? Which is why I thought it was really nice what we did last week to try to kind of figure out where I'm at in Linux before we go on moving forward to the project that we're working on.
Yeah, and so we're looking at Linux skills right now, but then we also have to go back and take a look at things like Windows, maybe Mac, network engineering, security. All of those things are going to have different requirements that we need to know. And there are some basic things you should know about all of those things.
And you know, I do agree with that because, you know, for us, we want to get into security. And in order for us to get into security, you really can't do that in a bubble. You have to be familiar with Linux and Windows. Network engineering is definitely like one of the biggest things, a must. And of course, then like we do on every episode, try to figure out, okay, what about security at the end of whatever it is that we have done? How does the security piece fit in it? So, I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, and that's the reason why we need to know all of these things. Normally, when you get into IT, people will pick one or two things that they want to get into. They might be on the Linux side. They might be on the network engineering side. They might be on the Windows side. And that's okay. And when I used to work for the ISP, I worked with engineers, network engineers. And that's pretty much all they did. And a lot of those people didn't really understand Windows all that well. They didn't understand server administration that well. They didn't understand security that well. These were network engineers, and these people were really good at what they did. But because we want to go into security, you're going to be asked to do a lot of different things. How do I keep the network secure? How do I keep our Windows server secure? How do I keep our Linux server secure? These are things that you're going to be asked. And how can you do that without understanding how these things work?
Well, I think the security piece, it's more difficult because you can't just, like I said, look at security in a box. You know, when it comes to understanding how secure a network is and how somebody can infiltrate it, they're not going to be sitting in there saying, oh, you only know Linux? That's the only thing we're going to use in the network. You know, or you only know Windows? That's the only thing. So you need to be familiar with more than just, you know, one type of a device. And, you know, so I think that's why I think the network part, if you do want to be in security, network engineering is actually crucial. And then from there, if you do what we're trying to do, you know, work with the server client piece on Windows and Linux, you know, just to see how different it is one from the other, because like the basics are going to be the same. Client and server relationship, you know, you got a server providing a server, a service and a client, you know, using that service. That's not going to change whether you do Linux or Windows. So then the only thing that you have to do is if you have a really good grasp of whatever the basics are on network engineering, the only thing that you're going to have to then learn is how Linux or Windows function to be able to get your job done. But still, it's a big chewy chunk. You know, learning security is tough and it's a lot. And in IT, everything is a lot. I mean, you tell me that when I'm going to be a part of a team, I'm just going to be working on only one piece, you know, my piece, right? But at the end of the day, if I don't understand the pieces that my team is working on and I'm supposed to work as a team, how am I going to know if I'm screwing somebody up or if I'm whatever it is I'm doing is affecting them in an adverse way? So, I mean, I don't know. What do you think about that?
No, and that's true. And the other thing that you have to think about, too, is that when I say that your one piece is going to be all you do, it may be that what you work on is securing the network side. It may be that you work on securing the server side. It may be that you maybe like, so one of the things that somebody told me at one point is that when they were looking at my skill set, and this was during a job interview, they said, okay, this is not an entry-level position that we're hiring for. I said, okay, fine. And then they said, your skill set at the time was better suited for that entry-level SOC position, which is the Security Operations Center. And I thought, okay, well, what does that actually mean? And in a SOC environment, what you're going to be doing is looking at a lot of logs and alerts. And then somebody above you is going to be taking care of those things. So you would notice that, let's say, for example, there might be something wrong with a Windows server. There might be something wrong on the network side, depending on how these logs are coming in. So that's where you have things like your SIEM environment, where Splunk is one of those things that you would use for that. And that's one that a lot of organizations have access to is Splunk. They're using that now. There are others, but that's one example. And so basically what happens is all of your logs from all of your servers, your network equipment, your workstations is going to go there. And then all you do is you analyze the logs and you say, okay, there's an issue with a server. There's an issue with workstation. There's an issue with the network. And then your job is to figure out kind of what's going on and then maybe alert somebody in that department or in that side of the security team to go do something about that. And that itself incorporates a lot of different things. Do you understand what's happening on the Windows side? Do you understand what's happening with the network? Because if you don't understand these things, how are you going to interpret what's happening with the logs?
Right. And you need to know that. That's why, in a way, you know, I was actually asking some of the IT people in my department what they do, and they're just single-minded, you know, with what they do, and they don't care to know what anybody else does. This is their part. This is what they're going to do today, and it really doesn't matter. And then because I asked about, hey, you know, what are you guys going to do about, you know, Spectre and Meltdown? And they're like, we don't care. That's so-and-so's problem, or, you know. And I'm like, how can you not care? How can you not say, I mean, the very first thing that I would do would be like, how does that affect my little piece, you know, and try to kind of make some sense out of anything, you know. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I'm just a baby duck still in this.
No, but I think you're looking at it the right way in terms of knowing what's going on around you so that your piece of the puzzle works well with everybody else's. If your piece of the puzzle is not secure, not functioning properly, doesn't have what it needs to be, because we talk about in security, the CIA triad, confidentiality, integrity, and availability.
Right.
How does your little piece of the puzzle fit into that? Is your stuff confidential? Is your stuff something that needs to be managed in a certain way to keep confidentiality in place?
But I guess for me, I'm thinking, you know, this may not affect me. It may affect somebody else, but I would want to say, hey, by the way, guess what? I'm seeing this, and I think that may affect you. Why would you just go blindly into, not my problem, not part of my job, you know? So I don't know. I get frustrated sometimes when I see people in IT that are set in their ways. They feel they've learned everything they need to learn. And, you know, at the fast rate that technology is kind of increasing is really kind of scary for that we have those people in the workplace.
Well, yeah, you're bringing up something that I think is even more important than just a security piece.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that you are part of a larger process.
Right.
There's more things going on. Mm-hmm. What you work on relies on other things. So if you're the Windows Server admin, you need the network people because they connect your server to the rest of the network.
Right.
If you're the workstation person, well, your workstation talks to the servers.
Mm-hmm.
Your workstation needs the network people because it's got to communicate to those servers across the network.
Yeah.
So oh, my voice is, I'm losing
drink
it
some
here.
Water.
So what you need is this collaboration that has to happen to make sure that the server people get what they want, the network people get what they want, and the workstation people get what they want. And then when the security people come into play, they're going to want to have certain things as well. So there has to be a collaboration between all of these people. And if you're on the security team, you need to understand how these different things function, at least at a basic level, so you can communicate with these people.
So would you include in our skill planning how to work as a team? Do you think that would be you know, something that you would want to implement on your set of skills on how to approach a group that you have to work with, or what your place would be on it, or how to communicate with them? Or do you not think that's, I mean, what do you think?
You know, that's really important. You have to have that. Now, how do you learn that on your own? I don't know how you would do that. So that's something that we're going to have to take into consideration. There are other things that I think are going to be really important for anybody who's getting into IT, but those are skills that I'm not entirely sure how you would learn those. I mean, I tend to focus on the technical side because that's something I can measure. That's something I can, you know, I can go to a book, I can go to a video, I can take training on. The other things that you're talking about are really important. They need to be there. But how would you learn that?
Well, and the reason why I ask, because I was actually asking one of the IT managers, you know, what you look when you hire somebody. And, you know, because most people want all these skills, and I'm going through my, you know, I don't have all this experience. How do you get a job to get the experience when people want you to already have experience and this, that, and the other? And his basic response was, well, the most important thing for me is if that person fits in the environment, if they're a team player, if they are somebody I can work with, and the culture of the team can actually work with the person, because they feel that you can develop some of those other skills on the job. But being able to communicate, whether it is with management or your team, or, you know, in your little IT environment, it seems to be that is gaining some importance. But anyway, I don't want to kind of distract us from what we were talking about. So about our skill set.
Yeah. So again, we went through the process of learning some things about Linux. And that goes back to our previous project where we're still working on our stack of Raspberry Pis. We have your virtual machine. We're trying to do some stuff in Debian. And we're learning how to use Linux, or you're learning how to use Linux, by installing these different services. And so when we went through that with DHCP, we've done some other things with it. And I thought, okay, it's going to be important for us to take a little step back and just review where you're at. What Linux skills have you learned so far?
Well, and for me, I felt more like you were testing to see not just where I was at, but if I understood what I did. Because when I was looking at those questions, and maybe we should share some of the questions. Like, for example, when we're talking about the commands, you were saying, okay, what is the command for listing a directory as a list with more information? You know, and that was that ls-l, right?
Right.
Let me continue. And then you said something about what is the command for listing a directory as a list with more info? And I'm like, what's the difference on that? You know, because it is the same. So you can do that ls-l or ls-a. And then how do you edit a file? And there were like two different ways of editing the file. You know, you can do just nano and then just do your file and then name it at the end. Or you can do nano and name the file, you know. So you were kind of like, you know, how many different ways, or like, what is the command for showing the process tree? And that was the one that I forgot because we only did it that one time. So, you know, I was looking in here and I'm thinking, he's asking me to see if not just if I know the commands, but if I know what they're for and why I'm doing this kind of thing. So was that your thought behind it, or?
Yes. And also we went through the process of doing some research on these commands. And some of the questions I gave you, you know, they're not great questions, not all of them. But because I was here, I can help you understand what it is I'm trying to get you to learn. So one of the things we did is we had your virtual machine open, and you were typing these things in there and trying to figure out, you know, what is the command? How do I do this? And then we used the man page for some of these. And then we also did some Google searching. So it's not that I want you to magically know these commands because you don't use them all the time. But I want you to be able to understand some of the basic ones. And then how are you going to learn more about that command? So we have the man page and you can see what's in there. Now, for me, the man page is great, but it's confusing. It doesn't always give you what you want.
Well, let me tell you something. That was a good thing that you did by showing me how to use it, because people go, oh, you have the man page and you can find everything in there. But I would look at it and I did not understand what I was supposed to do with it. You know, I can probably find the correct command, but it just wasn't clicking for me. And then you're like, okay, read the whole thing. What does this man page do? And then, you know, I had to read every single one of them, and then you had me apply some of them. So for someone like me, again, in let's just say what it is too. In the past, when I was trying to, you know, I was reading my book, I was watching the videos, I thought I was getting somewhere, and then I would take one of the tests and totally fail on it. It was part of the reason was is because we weren't checking with each other. We weren't checking the progress that we were making. We weren't checking to see whether I understood what I was being taught. Yeah, can I go through the motions? Anybody can go through the motions. But do you really understand what you're doing? Are you understanding that typing those commands, what you're changing, what you are looking for, what is showing to you, how to edit a file? You know, like when we went through the Linux file system, that's just a total mystery to me, you know, because I would sit in there and it's like, you know, I know varlog. I know that's where the log files are located. But, you know, then you're like, and where are the configuration files? And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, I have edited configuration files. I have done configuration files. And I couldn't tell you where they were. I was like, oh my God, you know. Now I know, you know, and then, you know, what is that USR for, you know, and I was like, well, what is USR for? You know, I didn't know that was the general software that is, you know, all the general software is installed in that particular directory. So it's like, you know, when I look at the Linux file system and, you know, we go and you say, go to this file or create a file or edit a file or look at this. You know, I'm using it, but when you stop and give me those very basic questions that for you, they're probably like, oh my gosh, you know, ABCs. For me, it's like, okay, I need to know this. I need to make sure that there is a difference between having, you know, the log files and the configuration files. They're not just all sitting in there all together, you know. So if I have to find something, where would I go and find it? You know, so for me, that was an eye-opener. I thought it was very helpful.
Yeah. And then, you know, we documented this as we went through this process. So you have access to this later on. And that's really important.
To me, that was big. That was big because now if I forget it, I know I can go to our Doku Wiki and say, you know what? I did this. Where is it that my files are at? What kind of files? What directory are they in? You know, what does the software go to? You know, and I think that the documentation, I can't really say enough. I know it's a pain in the butt. I know it's time consuming and nobody wants to do it. But I feel so much better, even with a few things that we have documented, because now I know that I can go in there and check it out.
And then we also did a quick review of DHCP.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I wanted to do that is just to make sure that we both understood what it is we actually did and why we chose to go in that direction. And there's still more that we have to do with DHCP and trying to understand what the different options are. So once we get the network built and you have your data center up and running, that's when we can try to figure out how we're going to use these different options we have in things like DHCP. So right. That's also going to be a huge learning experience, even for me, is that once things are up and running, okay, how do we manage this? How do we do other things? That's going to be interesting.
Well, and one of the things that I have learned through the DHCP process that it doesn't just give the IP addresses. And then the option that most people use is the dynamic option. But, you know, how does it work when you do a manual option like the doing it by MAC address? Or what was the other one?
So there was the one by MAC address.
Right.
And then there is a manual thing where it and I didn't even know this existed until we did
right,
this
until we actually did the project.
So this is the one where you can assign IP addresses to a host on the network or a bunch of hosts on the network. And then it's just that's the address they get forever. It's yeah. Automatically assigned. Boom, done.
And then we have to figure out why would you want to do that?
Yeah,
I mean, what is the circumstance or the kind of network that you have to be able to have that option, because you have to then do it manually, host by host. And that's a lot of work if you have a lot of workstations. So my thought is that it has to be something small, but I don't know. We'll have to look into that. But that is the beauty of DHCP, because for most people, it's like, oh, that just gives you dynamic IP addresses. And most people stop at that, you know. So I was glad, actually, that we got really in-depth and we did it more than once. And I think we should go back and do DNS and SSH again.
Yeah, we're going to do that. So let's get on to the other things that we want to learn. Now, we've covered the Linux side. Mm. We're not done with that. That's not a comprehensive overview of what you need to know.
Right.
But that's some of the basics. I mean, one thing that I know we left out is file permissions. But we just I wanted to keep it simple. And so later on, as we go through and set up these different services, we will look at things like file permissions and other management options that we have. So we're going to get there. But now let's take a look at some of the other things that I think are going to be important for us to learn. And some of these things are going to be similar to what we're trying to do in Linux. So we have Windows, right? So on Windows, you have a file system. What's in there? Why are these specific directories there? Like we have in Linux, the etc directory, and that's where most of your
configuration files are at.
Yeah, the configuration files are there. So that's one of the things that we need to start looking at in Windows and say, okay, they have these directories within Windows 10. They have these directories within Server 2012, 2016. Why are they there? Because when you do your installation, they're automatically created. So why do we have them? What goes in these directories? Why would I have to go there? Because sometimes you may find yourself in a situation where you do have to go into these directories to make a modification to something. And the question is, why are they there? When would you have to use these
things? And where would you, which directory would you go to? Because I'd be curious to see when we do look into why those directories are there and what they are for, how they relate to the directories that we have in Linux. Like, do they have one for the configuration files? You know, do they have one just for the logs, you know, for the log files? So I'd be curious to see if they have others that Linux maybe doesn't have, or maybe that we can create in Linux, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, and that's something that we're going to have to look into, and that's why we do this. And the other thing that we have to look at on the Windows side is the same thing on Linux. While it's a graphical interface, you do have DOS commands. You also have PowerShell, which I don't really know a whole lot about. I know there are some fancy things you can do with PowerShell. At one point, I was trying to learn how to set up Exchange. I wanted to set up Exchange. And Exchange is one of those things that requires you to have access to PowerShell. Like, it won't function without PowerShell. And there are some things behind the scenes that you can only do with PowerShell. So I went online and did some research on how to install this thing and how to make it work. And somebody had created a PowerShell script for installing Exchange. So I didn't have to do anything. I just ran the PowerShell script. It asked me a bunch of questions. I answered those questions. And before I knew it, Exchange was installed. So there are some cool things on the management side that you can use these different commands for, especially PowerShell on Windows, that you know, that's essential. You have to know them.
You do know we're going to have to get the Windows 10 certification, don't you?
Yeah, and that's something
I want to get the configuration one, just like you made me take the Windows 7 configuration.
Yeah.
And that was useful. So I thought that maybe we should, you know.
Yeah, we're going to have to do, there's so many things that we're going to have to do. I mean, when you look at this list, it's just a lot. So now let's get onto the network engineering side of things. So that's something that I think everybody in IT, regardless of whether or not you're going to be on the engineering team or not, you should know something about these things. Because when you have to do basic troubleshooting of whether or not this particular host is on the network or not, or can access other parts of the network, you're going to know why it's not working. You're going to have a better understanding of that. And that goes into you know, things like switching and routing. You need to understand some of that basic stuff in there. And then, of course, there's the OSI model. You should understand exactly what that is and why we talk about those things. So again, if you have an issue with a client server, well, what are you going to tell people? It's broken? I mean, that's oftentimes what even IT people will do that. They'll say, oh, it's broken. It's not working. And then they don't give you any other information. And I think part of the reason they don't give any other information is because they don't know that there is other information to give.
No, I agree.
So that's something that's, I think, important. And then when we talk about security, this is where it's just, you know, on the security side, it just explodes and there's a whole bunch of stuff. And these are some things that I think I'd like to learn more about. And we've played around with some of them. But we have things like Wireshark, Nmap. We've done some things with both. And then there's Nessus, which is a vulnerability scanner. We use OpenVAS. They're similar, although Nessus has extra features in there. Then we have Kali Linux, which we both used. We have risk assessments, security frameworks. And then, of course, there's IT management, where we talk about things like inventory control. And that's where you get into the Center for Internet Security's top five security controls, and then their benchmarks and all that. So, you know what? When it comes to security, you again have to know something about Windows, Linux, Mac, network, all these different things in order to make it. Because if you don't understand things like DHCP, when you do Wireshark and you're looking for DHCP information.
By the way, that's something I really want to actually do. Go back now to Wireshark and do some DHCP stuff in it and see what, just kind of get familiar what normal DHCP looks like.
Right. And you have that baseline from the logs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not going to look exactly like that.
I just want to compare it to the logs.
Right. So it's not going to look exactly like what you have in the logs, but you kind of have an idea of what to look for, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know the process, the request, the response, the acknowledgement, all
the
of
offer.
Those things,
mm-hmm.
right? So all of those things, if you don't know those things are there, you're not going to be looking for those things when you run something like Wireshark.
Yeah, no, I know. I'd be curious, though.
And then Nmap is all about the OSI.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to do a port scan of a host on the network to see whether or not it's working the way it should be, how are you going to know what to look for if you don't understand the OSI?
Right.
So there are some basic things that you have to know in order to be able to use these different tools.
You know, I used to really think the OSI was, oh my God, I'm going to memorize all this and, you know, this, that, and the other. But one of the things that I really enjoy about the OSI is that it really helps when you're troubleshooting, knowing what layer has gone haywire. So you don't have to waste your time on looking in like four or five different places when you go, okay, no, this is a layer two issue or a layer three. And you just kind of go right there and then go, okay, let's take it from this layer on and then, you know, move on from there.
Yeah, right, exactly. So if it's layer three issue, I know there might be something wrong with routing.
Mm-hmm.
If it's layer two, there could be something wrong with switching or something along those lines.
But, you know, I wish that they would say that in IT school. I wish that they would just tell you, you know, it's not as bad as you think it is. It's a very useful tool if you just, you know, say, hey, what kind of a problem is this? Layer one, layer two, layer three, and then just do some practicality exercises to where people go, oh, this is pretty cool, you know, and then they'd be able to look at it without going, oh, seven layers, layer one is what, you know, kind of thing. So anyway.
And you're right. A lot of times they don't do that. But that's mm-hmm. one way that I try to use the OSIs. I say, okay, what layer of the OSI is broken here? And then I kind of try to whittle it down to something that makes a little bit more sense to me.
For me, it's easy to retain it because now, you know, I look at it and I know what's in the layers. So then I just go, okay, it's a lot easier for me to kind of enjoy looking at it. I don't know. I'm goofy that way, I guess.
So let's talk about our lab and what we have. And one of the things I wanted to do, and the reason why I want to do this is because we're trying to learn these different things. And do we have, the next question is, do we have what we need on our lab or in our lab to help us learn these things? So if we take a look at some of the stuff that we have on your desk, you know, what kinds of things can you learn with what you have on your desk? So you have your workstation, right? That's running Ubuntu.
Mm-hmm.
So you can learn Linux with that. And that's an i7 system with 32 gigabytes of RAM. And you also have virtualization on there as well. So you have this ability to create a virtual machine and do testing.
Right.
Which is what we're doing with your Debian virtual machine in VirtualBox. So that's huge because that allows you to, one, learn Linux because you have that Debian virtual machine. Your system's already running Ubuntu, so you can learn some commands there. But you also have the ability with VirtualBox and virtualization to run Windows. So you could do a Windows 10 workstation. You could do Server 2012, 2016.
But you know what the best thing is of having that? I mean, to me, the most valuable thing is I'm learning to test things on a testing environment before I put it on my Raspberry Pis. Let's say you just use the new project to do that. So when I get a job in IT and something breaks and I need to say, well, I'm going to be putting this in this kind of an environment, I'm going to understand that I have the ability to test it on my virtual machine before, let's say, deploying it into work and screwing it up at work. And for me, having the ability to say, okay, I can set up this lab. I can actually put this environment into a virtual machine, test this configuration that I'm about to put on my life system, and make sure that it works before I wreck something else even further. So for me, that's so valuable because I was always scared of, you know, you hear about those people that they go, ooh, Band-Aid, and they do it right away or whatever, and they don't even bother to test it. And then you just go, I mean, I don't have the guts to do that. I wouldn't. I don't want to lose my job over that.
No, and that's something that I think is really important, is to have that space where you can test things. And this is something that I had an issue with when I worked for the ISP. I got in there and I thought, okay, I'm CCNP certified. I should know how to do this. And day one, I realized I'm in over my head. This is a lot more than what's on that particular certification. And so I thought, okay, what am I going to do to help me survive in this environment? And then they threw in another wrench into the mix. They said, okay, we're going to go from Cisco, we're going to migrate to Juniper.
Right.
So now I'm like, okay, well, I don't know Juniper. How do I work with Juniper devices? And that's when I decided to start getting some of that equipment myself, setting up a lab myself. And then I even had it set up to where I could remotely access my network from work. And then what I would do is I would log into my Juniper devices, make changes, do stuff, and then go, okay, here's the configuration I want. Let me take that and put it on my work machine so that I'm not damaging stuff at work. I'm doing the testing on my lab at home, and then I can bring stuff in and make it work, you know, on the device I have at work.
Right.
So that kind of changed everything, because it is scary when you have these production systems and you're worried that, hey, if I make a mistake here, it's going to go away. And then now what do I do?
Right. No, but for me, being able to put the lab together, you know, when you showed me, and it's so valuable because, again, I'm terrified of breaking things. You know that. I mean, how long did it take me to start playing with the devices out of fear? Because I was like, yeah, they're really pretty, nice. But yeah, I'll configure it later, or I will do that. And now I don't have to be afraid. I do it on my virtual machine. I see if it works. If it doesn't, I just delete it, start a new one, start over. And then once that I have all the kinks worked out, and that's why I'm really curious to actually get into our project, because of all the stuff that we've been doing on my virtual machine and kind of working some of the kinks, because I know it's not going to be smooth sailing. You know, in IT, you can sit in there and super prepare. There's always something that could just stump you, and it could be a tiny little thing, you know. So I'd be really curious to see, you know, how easy the transition is going to be, you know, when we do our actual servers in the Raspberry Pi, because there's that part of me that thinks, oh, we did DHCP that one time, we had so much trouble. And then the second time around, it just took no time. It went right in and it was smooth as pie. I don't lie to myself. I don't think that just because we worked those kinks over in the virtual machine, that is going to be smooth sailing, but I think it's going to be a little bit better than it could be.
Yeah. And so since you mentioned Raspberry Pis, that you have you have on your desk the stack of Raspberry Pis.
Right.
So your desk includes your workstation and your stack of four Raspberry Pis. And I think that, you know, as I begin to see how these different things help us, I think that if you're starting out and you want to do something or learn something in IT, your workstation with virtualization and your stack of Raspberry Pis is a pretty good place to start.
Yeah.
You can't do everything on that setup, but you can do a lot.
Right.
And the Raspberry Pis allow you to, again, play around with Linux some more by putting those things on an actual physical box, and then you're going to network those things together. And then as we go through our project, we're going to be doing all of that. So we can talk about that later.
Yeah.
And then we have other things on our network. We actually have a fair amount of stuff. So we have Cisco routers and switches. These were older things. Some of them I purchased. Some we got for free. But we do have a stack of that. And then we have a couple of Juniper SRX 210s, which you haven't played with, but that's something we're going to end up using at some point. And then we have a Palo Alto firewall. That's something I need to play with because I think I may have to renew the license here soon. It's been almost a year since we bought that thing. And then we have a Meraki firewall. We have the MX60W. And that's something that we're currently using. That's our firewall for our network.
Well, and we have the two ACES routers for the wireless. And then we also have that outdoor Wi-Fi that you wanted to set up.
Oh, yeah, we have those. We're not using them currently because we have the Meraki firewall has wireless in there. And that's something that we need to kind of figure out because, unfortunately, that's an older device. It doesn't do the 5 gigahertz and the 2.4 at the same time. Mm. So we're stuck on the 2.4 because we still have devices that don't work on 5.
Right.
So, but that's what we have on our lab. And I think that that's enough for us to be able to do a lot of the things that we want to do. There's always going to be things that you just can't get because they're too expensive. And I think for the most part, this is going to give us the opportunity to do all of the things that we just talked about, the security, the network engineering, the Windows, the Linux. And
don't forget the Kali boxes that we got on the My Server, the ones with heatsink already built in.
Those are
really nice.
So those are cool. Those are, I hate to bring those up. I think those are going to be really cool for what we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And those are going to have, I had a specific thing in mind when I got those. And we should mention that in the past, we used to take all of our equipment to the library.
Yeah.
And so when I got you your first little server box, and it's not really a server box, but we use it as that.
Yeah.
That's an i7 rugged machine. I mean, if you drop that off the table, it's still going to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
So we, I got that partly because we didn't have this lab. We were taking all of our stuff to the library, plugging it in there, doing stuff there. So I wanted something that was going to survive that, moving around a lot.
The portability, yeah. But they're nice. I mean, you can actually do a lot of that.
Yeah, and eventually what we're going to do with those two smaller boxes, because yours is an i7 and the other ones are i3s. And so what we're going to do with the i3s is we're supposed to make them kind of like a little hacker box with Kali Linux.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point we're going to end up doing that. But that's kind of, we have to take a step back and we have to go back and learn some of the basics so that when we get there, we'll be ready to go and we'll have all the necessary skills to be able to do that.
Right.
So do you have anything else you want to add?
No, you?
No, I think that's it. That's a lot. We have a lot going on. And we just wanted to share where we're at, what we're trying to accomplish, and some of the things that we'd like to learn in the future.
Yeah, and like I said, I think for people being in different levels of IT, you really kind of have to plan your own skill set based on where you're at and where you want to go.
Yeah, you do. So I think that's it for now. If you have any comments or questions, you can email us at info@section9.us. And if you want to take a look at our show notes, you can go to section9.us.
Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening.